We'll be taking a look in the next 45 minutes or so at how you can save your retirement. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Frank Armstrong of Coconut Grove, Florida, founder of the investment advisor firm Investor Solutions, Inc., and co-author with Paul Brown of a new book just out I've had a chance to read. It's called Save Your Retirement, What to Do If You Haven't Saved Enough or If Your Investments Were Devastated by the Market Meltdown. And Frank's been a regular guest on our program for a long time. Really pleased to welcome him back. You may have some questions for him as we move along today, and certainly join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. Frank Armstrong with us by phone. Hi, Frank.
Hi, Larry. Great to be with you.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. I really enjoyed your book because no matter where kind of you are in the planning for retirement stage, whether it's 5 years down or 10 years or 20 years or maybe it's right now, you've got some help in your book.
Well, I think everybody got whacked a little bit, and they're rightfully concerned, and so they're looking for a little guidance, and we're trying to provide strategies that will help them to recover as gracefully as possible.
Well, one of the things I liked about the book was your positive approach.
Well, this was an outlier event. You know, you can't, as an investment advisor, financial planner, we can't constantly be planning for the end of the world. We've had a very bad 10-year period, a very bad 18-month period, but that's not the normal result. And the tendency to measure from the very high water mark to the very lowest point distorts the reality of the world's markets as being the greatest wealth generating mechanism that we've ever seen.
Yeah, I certainly would agree with you on that. And you're in your book, I guess none of us were immune from you say one of your chapters is you're not alone. Just about everyone is unprepared to retire the way they really want to retire.
Well, but it's a temporary condition. Yeah. You know, a few people had, you know, what they considered to be a healthy pad over and above what their retirement needs were. But the vast majority of people, if you look at the economic research out there, have not saved nearly enough for retirement, and that's issue number one. Issue number two is that some of those people who were on track had malformed portfolios that performed rather miserably in a miserable environment.
Yeah.
And so they can't expect those malformed portfolios to necessarily snap back when the inevitable recovery occurs, and you know, an optimist might say that that recovery is already underway.
Yeah. How do you recalculate or calculate what you really do need to retire?
Well, we have about 75 calculators on our website, sinkdashswim.com, which supports not only this book but the previous book, The Retirement Challenge, and that's a good place to start. Do a budget. If you're close to retirement, you can estimate what your income needs are. And then subtract out your fixed income, like Social Security and any other military pensions or whatever. And the remaining amount has to be generated from your retirement accounts and your other liquid assets. So you take that dollar per year amount and multiply it by 20 to 25, and that's the amount that you need to have in the bank or in your accounts in order to generate enough to meet your needs.
Yeah.
That's a sort of a convoluted answer. I think our software, our calculators, make that process a lot easier at sink-swim.com.
And what was it again? Sink-swim.com, isn't it?
Right, yes. That supports the other book also, which was The Retirement Challenge, Will You Sink or Swim?
Okay.
And so we're supporting both books, but on the site we have 75 calculators, a whole bunch of articles, all kinds of other information that are useful to people who are planning their retirement.
Well, with callers online and some emailers as well, you can join us again, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Arlene in West Allis. Arlene, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Morning.
And thank you for this program because I do have some concerns. I retired at the end of 2007. I was 67, going to be 68. And at the job that I had, it was not feasible for me to work any longer because it was very... I worked in a hospital, so it was very hard for me to be lifting patients and all this other stuff. I had a pension from the hospital. I had also a 401k. When I retired, I rolled over the 401k into Roth IRA retirement thing. I had over $71,000. About a few months later, I lost $25,000, and now I'm very concerned. My husband still works part time, and he's still contributing to his 401k, but he will not get a pension because the companies he worked for previously had all
taken them away.
Took all their money when they fell under, and the company he's working for now is they're in the black all the time. They don't owe anybody anything, and so he's doing okay with his, although he lost money, but I'm concerned about mine.
Okay. Frank, what do you think?
Well, you know, your 401k performance is probably typical of many people's. The market's down, and so stock markets go both up and down, and this was a particularly bad year, but there's no reason to believe that it's not going to recover. And that an appropriate strategy that balances your need for current income with your need for long-term growth isn't going to be a recovery vehicle for you given some amount of time. But it's a good time for most of us to reconsider our lifestyle and what we really need, our spending habits, our saving habits, and to perhaps come back to a sense of reality in terms of what we really need to consume versus what we need to save for a rainy day. It's also a good time to reexamine your investment strategy to see if it's appropriate for your position in life and it's being executed economically and effectively so that you get the best probability of a healthy recovery when, in fact, the economy recovers.
Yeah. Well, I haven't taken out anything from the 401k because they say you don't do it until you're 71 years old. So I don't need that. That's not the issue. But I'm wondering, how do I get back that $25,000?
You invest it appropriately so that the market gets it back for you.
Oh, okay.
You can't just magically wave your
no,
your magic wand. If I could, we'd all be rich. The markets are volatile, and they are going to go both up and down. And it's natural that every once in a while we take a whack.
Mm-hmm.
But you wouldn't have had that $75,000 if you hadn't invested it appropriately over time.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't measure from the high water mark to the low water mark. You have to look at your investment experience over your entire career and say to yourself, "Well, okay, I got whacked last year." But I'm so far ahead of where I would have been if I had just put it all in Treasury bills, say.
Now, so I should ask my financial planner to put me into a good, market so that it will grow, right?
Right. You need a balance between your liquidity needs, which is short-term, high-quality bonds, say, that aren't going to go anywhere, and the long-term growth that you need to meet your needs. And so you have to sit down and determine what's an appropriate asset allocation or investment plan for you for the rest of your life that will provide you with steady income and some growth and that will allow you to sleep well at night and then design that investment plan and stick to it through thick or thin. Additionally, just a minute ago you said you can't take the money out until you're 71. That's not true. It's true that the government forces you to start taking money out when you're at age 70 and a half, but you could in fact get your hands on it now without penalty if you wanted to. However, since it is down and you don't appear to have to desperately need it, then perhaps you should let it recover and grow.
Yeah. Good luck, Arlene. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Terry emailed us and says, I have my retirement money in a 403B through my employer. a local school district. I have about 95% of the money in a guaranteed fund through a Prudential Insurance. I'm nervous about having the money through an insurance company. Would it be better to move my money? And if so, where would it be safe?
Well, 95% allocated to a guaranteed account is probably not an appropriate long-term investment plan for most people. It's not going to give you the growth that you need to meet your long-term objectives. Insurance companies typically, without naming any in particular, have rather high expenses attached to those 403Bs. If I had a choice, and many school districts don't give you this choice, but maybe you should politic for it, I'd switch the money to Vanguard and design an appropriate asset allocation plan for me there in their no-load index funds that met my needs. That would probably be the lowest risk, lowest cost way to approach the world's markets. And with an appropriate asset allocation, you can build the investment vehicle that's right for your particular needs.
All right. Sounds good. Let's go to some more callers. Bob in Gilman, we'll go to you next. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Yes, Gilman, G-I-L-M-A-N.
Yeah.
And I just was thinking about your guest thinking that we're not facing the end of the world and all the optimism in the world that he might express about things turning around is really bad. Because we are not going to see things turn around and get better. They're only going to get worse, and people sticking their money in bank accounts or retirement accounts or anything else is only going to lead to disappointment.
Well, I certainly hope you're wrong. I have every reason to believe you're wrong. I believe that the value of the world economy over time is going to continue to grow. Yeah, we got whacked, but most people are still getting up and going to work, even though unemployment's higher than it should be and historically has been. Most people are now beginning to look ahead to say, okay, yeah, the economy's not good now, but where do I want to be 2 years from now? How do I want to deploy my resources to capture the inevitable recovery? Having said that, there's no guarantees in life, and if you want to plan for the end of the world, feel free, but remember that you're responsible for your investment portfolio, you and only you, and you have to evaluate the chances that you're wrong. Personally, from my perspective, I don't see this as the end of the world. I don't see this as the black swan event. I just see it as an inevitable response to an economic cycle that got out of kilter. We've seen this before in many other economies where you have far too much credit, you flood the market, asset prices go up, and then inevitably the bubble gets pierced. And when the asset prices fall, the financial companies that provided all that credit take it, get hit hard, fail. So this, after some period of time, there's a recovery. It's an economic cycle that's been with us as long as we've had markets, and this is no different. In my humble opinion, it's a little more severe, but you know it happens.
I got my statement from one of my retirement accounts. And I'd lost about what our previous caller had lost, about $25,000 or $26,000 down from a year ago. But it was back up about $12,000 from over the year. So
we've had a wonderful recovery the last quarter. And yes, we're still down from the all-time high. But investors are beginning to look ahead and say, okay, the world didn't end. How do I want to position myself? Because, you know, the government has done a pretty responsible job. And not only our government, but governments around the world, in preventing this from turning into the catastrophe that it might have. The human spirit is such that people just get up and continue to do what they always do, which is try and improve their products, try and improve their service, try and invent new services and new ideas and new products. If you just want to roll over and play dead, you're probably not the norm.
Frank Armstrong, our guest today. Frank's from Coconut Grove, Florida, founder of the investment advisor firm Investor Solutions, Inc., and co-author with Paul Brown of the book Save Your Retirement, What to Do If You Haven't Saved Enough or If Your Investments Were Devastated by the Market Meltdown, published by FT Press. Larry Mueller here, Jim Packard, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about your investments and your retirement today with Frank Armstrong, Larry Mueller here. If you have a question for Frank, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email us at talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. We'll get you on pretty quickly here. Frank, I was reading, it might have been a Newsweek or one of the publications at least, that even during this down period, a lot of people, perhaps the majority of people, left their money in their retirement accounts or in their investment accounts and didn't really panic. Is that your impression as well?
The majority of people in retirement accounts don't change their asset allocation, but if you look across the cash flows in the, let's say, the mutual fund industry, what you see is enormous selling of mutual funds after the market goes down, and then you see enormous buying after it goes up. It's a repeat of the old story about buy high, sell low, repeat until you're broke, and wonder why you're not making money in the financial markets. People are best served to determine the appropriate asset allocation to meet their needs and stick through it through thick or thin. But a number of them make consistently bad choices and attempt to market time, and the vast majority of those people who attempt to market time are not doing themselves any real favor. A few people will get lucky. Most people will blow the decision either to get out or to get back in and imperil their financial stability.
Tim in Duluth, Minnesota, we turn to you now. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I got a question for you about my 201K.
You and a lot of other people have 201Ks today.
Yeah, I lost about 30%, and I really haven't touched it since, well, last year. I've just kind of left it go based on what you hear about, you know, it'll recover. But I've worked for, this is the third company I work for. I was laid off for 6 months, got a job back with a year ago, same industry, but I can't contribute to the first two 401ks anymore, so I can't dollar cost average. And I've really not touched those. What I was contemplating doing is, since the last report indicated I lost like another 3,000 in one of those funds, is should I be moving those 401k dollars into a more fixed return for the time being, where I get a guaranteed, say, 3%?
Well, a guaranteed 3% is not much good in an inflationary environment that's at 4%. You're going backwards. You can take control of those old 401ks and move them into an IRA and determine an investment policy that meets your needs, and I would suggest guarantees are probably not it. Additionally, since you can't contribute now to your new plan, you can always do an IRA and a spousal IRA to make up for the lost period of time that you're not a member of your new employer's plan. And I would suggest that you continue saving and investing to meet your long-term goals. And if you can't do it in your 401k or if you don't have a good 401k at work, then the IRAs are a pretty good substitute.
So should I be leaving those other two 401ks that I can't contribute to? Should I leave those alone?
Well, I think if I were you, I would probably look at rolling them into an IRA and then designing an investment plan that meets your needs, because you can probably do it more economically than you can in the many 401ks. But that's an individual issue. Those two 401ks might be the best two on the planet, in which case you want to leave them there. But if they're not very good, taking control of them and moving them to someplace like Vanguard, where you have low costs and excellent investment choices, might be in your best interest.
Yeah.
But I would, you know, the tendency to go to guaranteed returns after the market down is exactly the wrong lesson to have learned from this event.
No.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Bob in Cloquet, Minnesota. Your turn now. Hi, Bob.
Yes, hello.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you. I have a kind of a different situation. A few years ago, I was given a one-time payout, a Social Security payout from the country of Finland, where I used to live.
Okay.
And it's sitting in a bank there in euros, and I'm wondering what to do with it and how much it would cost me to get it transferred over here and into dollars, or should I just leave it at, you know, like 1% interest I'm getting? I don't know what to do there.
Well, the first thing you have to do, if you're a U.S. citizen or subject to U.S. tax, you may have an interesting tax issue, and you might need to get some highly qualified tax advice. And as we used to say in the Air Force, that kind of stuff is decided above my pay grade. I'm not qualified to give you help there. A 1% return is not very attractive in any economic environment, and you might want to look at what your alternatives are. But I'd suggest that if you are a U.S. taxpayer, you want to tread carefully, get expert advice, and then evaluate your alternatives for investing.
Yeah. I've already paid taxes in Finland on it.
Yeah, but you may have to pay taxes in the United States when you bring it in or on gains. But again, I am not a tax attorney. I'm not a CPA.
Okay.
In Miami here, we have thousands of firms that are qualified to help you make those decisions, but not mine.
Okay.
I just wondered about, you know, if I should
move it around. Yeah.
Well, I don't know how it's invested now, but from my perspective, money should be invested in the appropriate level in the total world's economy, and Finland may have fewer investment opportunities available to you than the rest of the world.
Yeah.
I mean, the world's a pretty big place, and Finland is a great country, but a small portion of the world's investment opportunities, and a 1% guarantee is probably not going to get you any return necessary to meet your long-term goals.
Yeah. Good luck, Bob. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Let's turn to Patty in Eau Claire next. Hi, Patty.
Yes, hi. I guess I also think that your guest is painting a bit of a rosy picture. I don't think it's the end of the world. I believe in social Darwinism, and I know something different will come out of it. But it will be something different. I don't think this is the same as the past kinds of cycles because it's on a much more global scale. There's a great deal of social unrest in the world. And the, quote, free market, we are not repairing this along free market theory. We are not letting, your guest said, well, places that can't make it, businesses that did bad things are failing. No, they're not. They're being propped up by the government, which means that money that should be going to new businesses with new ideas and new people and retraining people is not going to those people. Now, I'm talking from a blue-collar perspective, and I watched my meager $30,000 that I had set away drop by $12,000. So I took it all out and put it in a savings account that made some, 2% on it, and took a bunch out and did things like tightened up my house, had a Focus on Energy come out, and I did things to lower my bills, and I fenced in my property, and I did things that would increase the value of my property, although there ain't a guarantee that that'll come back to me in years to come. So I'd just like your guests to address those real differences, the way the government's responding and the problems on such a massive global scale. And I will listen to your response off the air.
Patty?
Okay, well, thanks. Listen, I respectfully agree and disagree with many of your points. I think there's a lot to quibble with about the government's response. On the other hand, I think if you look at the entire balance of it, I think it's been pretty responsible. Letting the banks that were too big to fail would have been catastrophic. And so I think we have to hold our nose and prop them up. whether or not we like it, you know, but then I think we need to look at better regulation down the road. I mean, what we did observe was the catastrophic failure of the world's regulatory mechanism, and the total repudiation of the idea that regulation is always bad, and that you know, that Wall Street can be trusted to act in the public interest as they pursue their own interests. So I think we need to bring some balance back into that picture. I certainly don't endorse every single thing that's happened. I'm not happy about every single thing that's happened. I think it did prevent a total catastrophe, and with appropriate regulation going forward, I think the world economy will recover. But you know, I share your concern with propping up institutions that have totally failed the test of businesses. I mean, they've simultaneously proved themselves to be corrupt, incompetent, and hopelessly insolvent. Nevertheless, letting them just disappear and take with it the world economy isn't the solution that I can endorse.
Oh. Thank you very much for that call. And Douglas and Eau Claire, we turn to you next. Hi, Doug.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks for your show. I wanted to ask your guest, I didn't hear the beginning of the show, but I heard you were mentioning the show was coming on the air today, yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So I quickly grabbed the phone, and I was lucky to get in, and I wanted to ask your guest about, I have some, my wife and I have some money in what I consider a pretty balanced portfolio of equities and some international stock and some bonds. So, I was wondering, when is the best time to enter the municipal bond market? I know there's some federal tax advantages to being in the bond market, that bond market, like through a mutual fund. Does that opportunity typically come when equities start to improve, which, you know, later this year, U.S. stocks will probably start to improve, and I wonder if your guests could tell me about that, please.
Okay.
Well, U.S. stocks have already started to improve, along with stocks the rest around the world. Municipal bonds are bonds, and it's mathematically certain that you will lose money in a long-term bond, whether it's a municipal bond or a regular corporate bond or a government bond, if interest rates go up. You know, the longer the term of your bond, the higher the risk that you face. And people who are out in very long, 20, 25, even 15-year muni bonds are going to get punished if and when interest rates go up. And they certainly don't have much room to go down in today's environment. One of the things that's going on in the stimulus package is absolute massive tampering in the world's bonds markets. And they've done that deliberately to drive interest rates down to where short-term rates are now close to zero and below zero in real terms. But that can't endure forever. The other issue you have to ask yourself about municipal bonds are, am I in a high enough tax bracket to benefit from them? Because remember, the objective is not to avoid taxes. The objective is to have the highest after-tax return. And muni bonds typically pay somewhat less of interest than do corporate or government bonds because of the tax advantage that they have. So far, far more people invest in them than realistically should, because they're thinking about, I just don't want to pay any taxes. And in fact, they're giving up a lot of after-tax accumulation.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Daryl in Exonia, we are on to you now. Hi, Daryl.
Hi. Well, the comment you made before about what we should have learned from what has happened, and to me, everyone should have learned from what has happened is that you cannot be a lazy investor, and basically, you know, you are responsible for your money, and if you think you can just hand it off to some investment guy and he's going to take care of you and he's going to look after your interests, You know, it's if you want to get in real estate, then you have to actually get boots on the ground. You buy something, and then you are the guy who has to deal with the tenants and do all the work, and that's how you make money the hard way, the real way. If you think you can just push click mouse buttons and say, well, you know, I'm just going to let somebody else do it. And, you know, I had these guys come to my house, and they said, well, I said, I want to buy gold. And they said, we'll get you into these gold funds. I said, no, you hand me the gold, I'll hand you the cash. And they're like, oh, no, we don't work that way. Well, those gold funds didn't perform the same as gold. You can't be a lazy investor. You got to get your hands in there. You got to deal with people. And you can't just trust that, you know, basically they said, well, give us your money and trust us. I said, no, you know, there's the door. Have a nice day. And that's what I learned from what has happened in this whole thing.
I agree with the idea that you can't be totally hands-off, that you need to spend some time to educate yourself. Because I am an investment advisor, I like to think we add value to our clients. But, you know, that's something you'll have to decide for yourself, whether an investment advisor can help. If you want an investment advisor, if you think that they can help, my advice would be to find one who is compensated by fees rather than commissions, and that has the appropriate education, professional certifications, and investment philosophy to meet your needs. If I started to draw blood, you would look like a pincushion. If I took your X-ray, you would probably end up glowing in the dark. And if I tried to fix your car's brakes, you would give up hope of ever driving that car again. There's only so many things that we can do well in life, and we all rely on other people to help us do those things that we can't do well. In fact, there are a great number of very competent investment advisors and a number of charlatans, and you'll have to tread carefully and make an informed decision as to your investment advisor if you want to go that route.
So you got to be skeptical of the experts.
You have to be, yes, sir. You can't just turn your money over to the first guy that walks by. You have to do a little bit of research on the advisor to make sure that he's going to operate in your best interest, that his pay doesn't provide a huge conflict of interest with your objectives, that he's got the education he needs and an investment philosophy that you can endorse. But to be totally hands off, just take the first guy that wanders by and give him all your money is in fact a recipe for disaster. But I make the same type of decision when I go to get my car fixed.
Yeah.
You have to find people that you can trust and have a reason to believe that they have the education, the credentials, the tools, and the philosophy to help you.
Yeah. Daryl, thank you very much for calling. Lee in Lake Mills up next. Let's go to Lee. Hi, Lee.
Good morning. Good morning. You're working on a subject that I was alluding to. I have some bad experience from the economic collapse, but there were two things that became obvious to me upon dissecting the situation afterward. One of them is the responsibility, the fiduciary responsibility of whoever you choose. And, well, one can be warned to research successfully, research in depth. The real test is who assumes the degree of fiduciary responsibility assumed by the various advisors. And there's a cornucopia of initials after the name, and most of them do not accept any fiduciary responsibility for their advice.
That's more than fair. There are some ways to look at that, though. The National Association of Professional Financial Advisors, NAPFA, at NAPFA.org, every single one of their members is fee-only, accepts no commissions, and signs a fiduciary oath. Registered investment advisors like my firm, signs in writing as fiduciaries on every single account we have, no matter how large or small. And I would certainly demand that of any investment advisor.
So, you know, you can, in fact, search out fiduciaries and hold them to that standard. If they're registered investment advisors, bank trust officers, et cetera, the law holds them to much higher standards than they do to broker-dealers. That's a subject of lively debate now in Congress and the SEC as to what the fiduciary standards should be for various people who call themselves advisors. I hope it gets sorted out in the best interest of investors.
Yeah. Let's go back to your book a minute, Save Your Retirement, Frank. You talked earlier about your website and where people could learn more about the book and also about investing.
Well, the website, sink-swim.com, is designed to be as good a source for individual seeking retirement advice as we can put together. Investorsolutions.com is the investment site or the site that, for my firm as investment advisors. And between both sites, one of them is specifically targeted toward the retirement question, and the other targets the investment principles that I think people should educate themselves on so that they can adopt the appropriate investment philosophy to meet their needs.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Frank. Thank you so much, and we'll look forward. Hopefully you'll visit with us again.
Well, I hope so. It is always a pleasure. I enjoy it. I enjoy the conversation with your listeners and the very high quality of questions that we get. So thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you, Frank. Frank Armstrong of Coconut Grove, Florida, founder of the investment advisor firm Investor Solutions, Inc., and co-author with Paul Brown of the book Save Your Retirement. It's just out, as a matter of fact. It's called Save Your Retirement, What to Do If You Haven't Saved Enough or If Your Investments Were Devastated by the Market Meltdown. It's published by FT Press. And he's also an author, by the way, of The Informed Investor, which is published by Amicon. Investor Solutions has been named by Barron's as one of the top 10 independent financial advisors in the country. So really pleased to have him with us, and he will be back again. But we're going to turn our attention to something else, and the something else is digital cameras. I see that Kodak has eliminated Kodachrome film, or they're not going to be using it anymore. Maybe we'll talk about that for a minute with Jack Socha of Spring Grove, Minnesota. But we'll deal with how to use that digital camera you bought. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.